How's it going, everybody? Brent Alverson, Dave Meltzer here. Wrestling Observer Radio. It's June 11, 2026. Figure4Online.com/Dominion. What?
Dominion Chew. Dominion Chew.
WrestlingObserver.com. We got a lot to get into here today, Dave. God
Big weekend.
Damn it.
Big weekend coming.
All right.
Yeah, we got Dominion, which will be on... it's Saturday at... 3 o'clock a.m. Eastern, midnight Pacific, late Saturday night, early Sunday. White House show is Sunday. So those are the, I guess those are like the two big shows, right? Yeah, I think those are like the two big shows.
Just that, SmackDown, and whatever this collision is this weekend.
Collision, of
course. What happened to the Bucks and the Dogs?
It's on Collision.
I know, but it was advertised for Dynamite.
It actually wasn't. It was advertised for Collision. It always was.
Whatever.
I remember it from last week. They did specifically say it was on Collision.
All right. What's going on with this Janelle Grant thing?
So what happened is the actual letters that went to the board of directors. There were three letters to the board of directors.
Emails.
Yeah, emails, right. And they came out. And Janelle Grant responded to them. I was really surprised that she would, because I would think that her lawyers should tell her not to be doing this, but she did. But the key is, I guess, the letters came out, and Nick Khan was asked about them, and he said, like, the first letter they got, they just said, you know, there's so many, what do you say, erratic wrestling fans. So he read it. And
he essentially said they get emails similar to this saying crazy things, threatening people
all the time, yeah.
And so the first one they got, they just thought, we get these all the time.
But the second one, when the second one had enough details, and I guess it had her name in it, and he knew her name, and he knew the situation, and he knew it was something that was serious. So the one thing is that from these letters... it's the McMahon side has always claimed that, you know, like when you sign an NDA, I mean, you're supposed to not tell anyone. I mean, like anyone, not your buddies, not anything. I mean, I had, one of my best friends was involved in a lawsuit with a famous wrestling character, and it was settled out of court. And he just, the only thing that he could tell me was that I was very satisfied with the outcome. And he goes, and I cannot tell you anymore. And I remember when Martha Hart, you know, had the settlement with WWE. Now, it did come out in other places that the settlement with WWE over Owen's death was $18 million, which at the time was a giant number. And if it happened today, I would bet you that the award would be like four times that, just because of the nature of so many different things. But that was the number at the time. But until that came out, you know, like, she could not tell Brett. And Brett was furious at the time of, you know, being, you know, supportive of her and the whole thing. And she just goes, I can't tell you. You know, I can't tell you. So anyway, this person who sent these letters, and we don't know his name or her name, it does look to be someone who knew her, even though she says that she has no idea who it would be, and that some of the facts were false. Well, a lot of the facts were false, because, I mean, some of the ages were like way off. Like, they had Vince at 80. You know, this would have been 4 years ago when all was going down.
They claimed that Vince was 80 and Laurinaitis was 70 and she was 25. All of these were completely wrong.
Well, the 80 wasn't that far off. You know, he was 76.
They were all completely wrong.
Yeah, that wasn't that far off. I mean, yeah, but did he look up on Wikipedia? I mean, Johnny was 59 and she was 41 at the time, and he or she thought that she was 25, but she did look 25 for whatever that's worth. So whatever. So, and I don't think that Johnny looked 70. That was the one that was weird to me, but whatever. And so they knew, I mean, you know, Nick Khan, who knew Janelle Grant was, I mean, and he knew, I don't know how much he knew about the McDivitt stuff, but, you know, McDivitt's name is mentioned in there, Jerry the lawyer, which, you know, obviously. So he knew that this one was serious by the second letter, and said that that's when they started, you know, taking it seriously. You know, that the, you know, the thing is that it is pretty clear, even though, like, the ages are wrong and the person said that, essentially, that we, meaning this person and Janelle Grant, were both homeless, which she was never homeless, and she and you know, addicted to Percocets, which she said she was never addicted to Percocets, and she has no idea who it is. But the person did have, an you know, that there was stuff going on. It involved Vince, it involved Johnny Laurinaitis, and it was you know, settled with Jerry McDivitt, and that she got a big settlement and knew enough of the details, and it pretty much had to come from her side. So in the sense of Vince stopping payment because she did not keep quiet, it looks like that is what happened. I'm sure it was not the smartest move to stop payment because of everything that happened since. It was probably, I'm sure that if he could do this one over again, he would not have stopped the payment. He would have just kept
paying. Probably should have taken it to arbitration.
Yeah, I suppose. But,
well, yeah, that's the whole point. Like, that's his whole deal, that this needs to go to arbitration, because if there's ever an issue, it needed to go to arbitration. So yeah. When the first issue came up where he decided he was going to stop paying her, yeah, he probably should have gone to arbitration instead of stop paying her.
Or he should have probably just paid her just to keep her quiet, I mean. But I guess he thought that, well, since it's out, I mean, can't hurt me anymore. And yeah, it would have been smart to keep paying her. But anyway, that's the situation, in the sense that she is responding to it. She says she doesn't know, you know, who it was, or anything like that. So that's, you know, wherever this thing stands. But yeah, it all came out in the shareholders lawsuit, as far as like explanation. Nick Khan was deposed, and Frank Riddick was deposed, and, you know, they're all, you know, talking about, I didn't really go into detail of whatever, but you know, keeps going and everything. But yeah, the three letters are out. If you want to see them, they're on. I don't know, you know, which sites that they're on. I don't know if they're on.
They're on our site.
Yeah. Okay. So the thing is there, and then yeah. So it was a very very interesting thing there.
All right, Undertaker and Rey Mysterio and CMLL and AAA.
That's a lot. So,
well, they Rey were talking about him.
Rey Mysterio was a guest on Undertaker's show, and there's the funny one is the thing that has gotten the most reaction, which to me, I mean, it, you know, I could see where it would get reaction. I mean, but was Undertaker saying that you know, we need to teach some of these guys, you know, all the moves are great, but we need to teach them about storytelling. And people, you know, of course, you know, it was kind of like this thing of the indictment of all Mexican wrestling, that they do a lot of moves and they don't tell stories, which immediately anyone who's watched Mexican wrestling would just go like, oh God, you know, like ignorant gringo talking about something he doesn't know. And Undertaker doesn't really know, you know, I mean, he's learning on the job, you know, about Mexican wrestling. It's not like he knows. I mean, he's a historian or anything like that. And from his framework, I could see where he would say that, because that's what you're taught. You know, you're taught that these guys don't know psychology and they don't know storytelling. You're taught that. We're the only ones who know that. Like, if it's in AW, they don't know it, even though NXT does the same thing, you know, the whole bit, you know. So it's like, yeah, I can see why people are mad at him, especially when it's, you know, in that situation. At the same time, there are wrestlers that are in AAA, and if you watch AAA previously, where they just go out there and just do crazy things and no rhyme or reason. I mean, not everyone, but there are people who do that there. And there's also, again, I think that's true, but I think there's also the mentality from, you know, a lot of people that those words, those psychology and storytelling words, are used to weaponize that somehow we're smarter than they are, and they don't know what they're doing. And of course, you know, if you're someone who follows Mexican wrestling, you'll be offended by that, and quite frankly should be offended by it. But I mean, it's like, I understand in the sense of he's talking about certain people. It's not like he said, like, you know, Ultimo Guerrero and Blue Panther, you know what I mean? Don't know what they're doing, you know, or whatever. Mystico doesn't know what he's doing. I mean, if he'd done that, it's one thing. Although, the one that I think should have gotten people hot, because it really does show, I mean, you could either say it shows complete arrogance or just, well, we're at war and this is what we do. But, you know, basically Ray was talking about when he went to, you know, so I went to Reno, Mexico a couple times, and Undertaker immediately jumps in and does this, you know, like, and I think he mentioned CMLL, you know, I went to Reno, Mexico, CMLL. And then Undertaker immediately jumps in and goes, who's that? Never heard of that. MLC, MLW, or whatever. And Ray kind of gets the hint right away. You know, it's like he's in a bad position, because it's like, what's he going to say? You know what I mean? It's like, you got to keep it cordial. You're on his podcast. You're in a wrestling war. They're the enemy. So Ray does, you know, LLMC. You know, and they're trying to kind of make fun of CMLL in a pretty, in a way that came off very, very, very tacky. And then at the end, you know, it's kind of like, do they even still exist anymore? Are they still around? And it's kind of like, you know, of all the things to say, I mean, you know, look at the equivalent. Let's just say that, well, who'd be? Tony Khan, MJF do an interview. And somehow the subject of WWE comes up, and instead of saying anything, they just go, I've never heard of WWE. EAW, are they still around? You know, do they still exist? And that's kind of like what they did. And so I thought that really came off tacky. I kind of felt sorry for Ray a little bit, because I think that he was put in a position once Undertaker, you know, made it clear that we have to do this party line, that, you know, they're the, you know, that they, we don't know if they even exist anymore, you know. But I can't imagine that Ray really wanted to go along with it. He did, so he does deserve blame. He was on the show, but the way that it was set up, you know, was kind of like, it put him in a bad position, and he is, you know. But it's like, it couldn't have been more tacky. The other thing there was, Undertaker was talking about how, you know, like, you know, you're the greatest Mexican wrestler of all time. You're the greatest masked wrestler of all time. And Ray himself said, there's no way that you could put me above El Santo, Blue Demon, or Mil Máscaras, which, you know, is interesting, because, you know, WWE and people in WWE have been trying to say, oh, you know, he's got, he's so much more famous because he's in WWE. I mean, he's in WWE. He's got to be bigger than anyone in any other company, El Santo, Mil Máscaras, Blue Demon. And, you know, Ray himself, a lot of the, you know, this discussion's actually been around a lot, you know, where, because of, you know, Ray being very famous worldwide through WWE. And I have always told people, I go, if you ask Ray, he will never put himself above El Santo, because in the Mexican culture, nobody could be, you know, you couldn't be number one. It's not true. And he would never, you know, he would never ever say that. And of course, in fact, that is what he said, that I would never put myself above them. So, those were some of the things, but that, the CMLL stuff, that was pretty much on the tacky side. So, the Triple Mania in Vegas, September 11th. Already sold out, which, again, it was like 1,669 tickets. So it's not like it should be, you know, it shouldn't have sold out immediately, but it did. It sold out immediately. So, you know, why? Like, again, they had their reason, you know, for running, you know, obviously for running Vegas. I think that it was, you know, to, you know, they're looking for sponsors. They're looking for TV deals. Those people aren't going to fly to Monterey. They're not going to fly to Mexico City. You bring it to, you know, it had to be L.A. or it had to be Vegas. And I think that it's probably easier to get those people to Vegas. So they run the show in Vegas, and you know, they want to run in a nice small location, and that's, you know what I mean, in, you know, the smaller the location, in many ways, the more intimate the location, the better the show is for the people in the building. So I think that this show is not done, even though the ticket prices are very, very high, the show is not done to maximize a gate or maximize attendance. It is done for, you know, the reason of getting this product to be watched live by important people who will then, in some form, invest in this product in the United States. Because as has been said many times, this company was not bought, it was not bought for, you know, to be the biggest company in Mexico. It was not bought for how popular it is in Mexico. It was bought to make money worldwide, in particular the U.S. market, because there is so much more money in the U.S. market than there is in Mexico. And so that's the story there. So, yeah, that's about it. I did watch last night's CMLL show, and what was it? So the I guess like the Máscara Dorada and Yutani had a lightning match, and it was awesome. You know, it's like they it's 10 minute time out. They went 8.5. Both are great. Máscara Dorada won, I believe, with the Shooting Star Press. And but yeah, awesome match. And the main event was really interesting because it was it was interesting because of the crowd. So the crowd is about, it looked about 7,500 people, you know, which is a great crowd for a Tuesday. And you could look in the crowd, there's a lot of people in soccer outfits. It appeared that, and I'm certain, especially with the reaction to the main event, that this was not your regulars, that this is exactly what they're expecting, you know, for these next 2 months, is a lot of people in Mexico coming from foreign countries, and they're going to come to see the wrestling show. And so anyway, in the match, you know, they're having this, it's Místico and Titán against Volador Jr. and Soberano Jr. The one thing was is that Soberano Jr. did get an incredible reaction, you know, from the women and all that. But Místico got an even louder reaction than usual. And usually, like, when the people who come, you know, that really, the one they know is Místico. You know, he's the star of the show. So, you know, if you're going to matches 3 times a week, it's like, you know, you're not necessarily going to react, you know, over the top for him, although they usually do. But this was a louder than usual reaction for him. The match was really, really good. As you know, typical. You know, their main events are 8 times out of 10, they're great. And this was certainly one of them. And then in the third fall, Titán does a springboard double foot stomp on Volador Jr., clearly near fall spot. Edgar Noriega, the ref, who has been known to botch things, and he sure did here, counts 1-2. And, I mean, Volador Jr. gets his shoulder up at the last split second. Edgar counts 3. Okay? And then it's just like, they probably had, like, the 3 best minutes of the match still to come. And, unfortunately, Místico, of all people, you know, because the finish is probably Místico winning with La Mística. But instead of just basically, the ref calls the match off. And everyone, all 4 of the wrestlers are mad to different degrees, okay? But the heels should be mad. The baby faces won. I mean, and they were, you know, Místico was the maddest of the 4. Instead of like, you won the match. But he was just furious. And the ref wouldn't, you know, Edgar just waved it off. I have seen in the past sometimes when this happens where the wrestlers just like ignore him, you know what I mean, and just keep doing their match and kind of force the ref to, you know, have to count again or count the submission when they go to the finish. But he was just, you know, so adamant, and they just stopped it. And the crowd's cheering like crazy, which is one of the things why you know that it's not a regular crowd. Because if this was on a Saturday night and the ref botched the finish like that, they would boo that ref so much. I mean, if it was in the United States, it'd be even worse. than in Mexico, you know, if everyone figured out, and it was very easy to see that he botched the finish, they would have booed him out of the place. But in fact, they just cheered because the baby faces won and they didn't see anything wrong with it. And so it was a very unique ending to the show.
All right, we'll get to Dynamite and NXT here in a moment. But first off, the ratings for the week.
Man, there is a lot of ratings for the week. So I guess the one thing, let me just get them out. For Dynamite, okay, I got the panel numbers, you know, which is the original way this stuff was rated, and it's really pretty fascinating. So the show last Wednesday that did 638,000 and 0.11, with the modern numbers, the panel number was 773,000. This is how it was rated a year ago. So it was rated till September of last year. So 773,000 and 0.17. So, you know, I mean, it speaks for itself. I mean, 773,000 against the NBA Finals. I mean, that is a phenomenal number. And that doesn't include Max. I mean, that is just absolutely a phenomenal number. SmackDown, also very similar in the sense of the number that they had, and this was also against the NBA playoffs, right? Friday night? Yeah, I think so. 1,089,000 and 0.24, but the panel number was 1,248,000 and 0.28, which again, I think is a great number against the NBA Finals. You know, in both of those shows, the NBA both nights did over 16 million viewers. So, you know, that was pretty big. So both successful. Collision, you know, was the biggest number since, I believe, as far as total viewers, it was the biggest number since February, Grand Slam. They did have the advantage somewhat, so TNT during the day, they had a U.S. men's soccer team at 1:30, and then they had the U.S. women's soccer team at 4:30. That game ended at like 7:30, and they did a 30-minute post-game show. And the 30-minute post-game show, you know, the audience went down. And AEW actually, in viewers, picked up the audience, although in 18 to 49, the soccer audience, which, you know, was of the post-game show, was a little bit higher. So they did have benefit of a much, much bigger lead-in than they usually get. But it's not like, again, it was the lead-in was 424,000 viewers. It's not like they had the, you know, a million-plus or whatever the soccer games did. You know, a big lead-in. Because usually the Saturday night lead-in for Collision is minuscule, you know, like 0.02s and things like that. So they did 496,000, 0.08 panel and big data. Panel was 507, 0.10. So it didn't gain as much, but still in 18 to 49, it was up 25% from the other thing. But yeah, that was against the NHL playoffs. But that
The panel was 507?
507, 0.1.
And what was the other one?
496 and 0.08.
Okay, so I still have to ask this question.
Yes.
How is panel larger than big data plus panel?
You should have asked that question when I brought up the
I did ask this number. Question last week.
Okay, so I've already answered.
Well, whatever. I mean, how is big data plus panel smaller than just panel? Big data has negative viewers?
They just measure it. They measure it differently. Whether it's more or less accurate is hard to say. I think most people feel that when it comes to 18 to 49, you know, when it comes to 18 to 49, the growth should be the same exact number as panel, in the sense of it's not. You know, it's like if one's up 20%, the other should be up 20%, and it's not. And that's really impossible to explain because, again, big data does not allow you to know. Big data can only, it's basically measuring set boxes. So all it can do is measure if the home is watching the show. It can't do anything else. It can't measure viewers per home, can't do demos, can't tell you if it's male or female. It just knows that the sets are watching. Panel, which is what Nielsen does, which is, you know, they monitor a certain number of homes, and they monitor you know, what, who's in the room watching it, you know, male, female, age group. I mean, everything is up on the diary. It's very, very distinct. And those are the numbers that, you know, have been.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah. So if you have those panel numbers, okay.
The panel numbers are supposed to be used to determine the big data, but they're not. And you're going to try to ask me why? Like, no one is going
to
answer.
Okay, so that was my question.
Yes.
Because if you and I watch a show together and there's two of us in the room.
Yes.
How does big data make one of us vanish?
It can't.
Well, apparently it does, because there's 496,000 viewers with big data plus panel.
Okay, but it,
but 507,000 with only panel.
Okay, that's not the problem. That's not the problem at all. No, the thing is with that is that the panel may show more. I mean, the big data may show more or less, and it's for sports, for whatever reason, it's always more, and for wrestling, for whatever reason, it's always less. Less, essentially, homes on a percentage basis. You know, and it's you know, again, the 507 and 496 is actually pretty close. Usually it's a lot different. Usually for the wrestling, it's been, you know, 15-17% less using the big data. So the 18 to 49 should also be, you know, to make sense, should also be 15-17% less. In fact, you know, like for last Wednesday's collision, it was you know, I think 37% less. I mean, roughly, because it went from a 0.11 to a 0.16. I mean, the panel's a 0.17, and the panel in big data is 0.11. That's a giant difference. And the viewership, you know, 636 to 773, that's a giant difference, too. So, in theory, it should not be down that much, using the more modern tools, especially since in these other sports it goes up. But whatever it is, it should be a consistent thing, and why it's not, I have no idea. And the same with, but you know, again, like the same thing happened with SmackDown. So, I mean, the panel is the old way of measuring. So when you're talking about these numbers as compared to a year ago, I mean, they're actually, SmackDown's lower, but the AEW shows are like way up in viewers, and not necessarily up in 18 to 49s. But some of that, again, could be as more and more people go to max. You know, we don't know the max numbers. So anyway, that is that's Collision. You know, Collision, big success. Dynamite, big success. SmackDown, considering the competition, it's a success, I consider. Now, Monday, this past Monday, the basketball game did 23.8 million viewers. And the Netflix had another one of those days. They just... I couldn't even tell you why. I mean, they got all of the numbers for the European countries, and in our hemisphere, they had nothing. So I will tell you that I am certain, almost certain, I shouldn't say certain because stranger things have happened, that the audience for Monday's Raw would be the second lowest in the history of Raw. I'm virtually certain between that basketball game. I mean, if you look at what they had for Monday's show that I have seen, it's way lower, but it's also totally messed up. You know, like there's U.S. isn't top 10, Canada's not top 10. It can't be that bad. I mean, even though I'm sure it was bad, it can't be that bad. Now, the one that everyone's talking about and totally missing the context of was June 1st. Okay, so it was lowest in history. And the reason it was lowest in history was because it was 3 hours and 38 minutes show. People did not stay for the Grande versus Grande match in great numbers. I think that they were down 40% from the rest of the show. So you ended up with they claim 2 million, and that's even skewed high, but it was probably, you know, 1.885, I believe, would be the real number as far as views worldwide for the June 1st show, which works out to about 2.5 million regular viewers, under a million in the United States, and live in same day, 636,000. So Dynamite, this, there's no more question this week. Dynamite beat it either if you use the Nielsen panel and big data, it beat it by 2,000, which admittedly, the margin of error when we're comparing these things is very is small. So it actually could go either way. If you're talking about, you know, just the panel number, I mean, not even including Max, the Dynamite number, 773 minus 636. So it's, I believe, 137,000 higher for Dynamite. And actually, Collision at, you know, was about 140,000 lower than that. So and it's very conceivable that 140,000 people watch Collision on Max. It wouldn't surprise me at all. I don't know that. So it is possible, perhaps even probable, that depending on, you know, if you think it's 140,000 on Saturday, that Collision outrated Dynamite. But it does, I mean, outrated, I should say, outrated Raw. Now, the one thing also is that for the first time ever, the SmackDown show in Canada outrated Raw. That never has happened since Dynamite began. So that is a sign, you know, that, you know, Dynamite was, I mean, that the, you know, just the you know, that again, and that Dynamite show on June 1st, it did not go against the NBA. But the problem wasn't the competition. The problem this week's the competition. The problem that week was not the competition. The problem that week was, they went 3 hours and 38 minutes, and the you know, there probably were, you know, probably, I would guess that they probably were a little lower than usual, just based on other markets and everything, but it wouldn't have been, you know, like 6:36. You know, usually it's in the sevens, and the difference is that the third hour dragged it down. The third hour was probably, or it's not the third hour, it's from 2 hours and 30 minutes to 3 hours and 38 minutes, so that 68-minute thing. That probably averaged about 4:40, so that dragged down everything. So, but yeah, it's the lowest in the history of Raw by far, not even close. And this week, even against that $23.8 million NBA game, we'll probably beat it. But the number, I'm sure, on Monday will be very, very low again. But, you know, it's not like if you want to weaponize it and say, oh, they're dying, Raw's dying, both this and that. It's not true. It's just, if you had a Dynamite show tonight and it went 3 hours and 38 minutes, believe me, it would be a really low-rated show, even if the NBA game wasn't on, which it was. And my God, well, I mean, the comeback at least happened. I don't know if you know about the game, but it was, you know, one of the greatest comebacks in the history of the NBA. But the comeback itself, the Knicks won, they're up 3-1. The comeback did happen after Dynamite went off the air. If that comeback was going on during Dynamite, I can just imagine what kind of stuff that did. You know, although I think most people thought Game 3 was going to be higher than Game 4 because, you know, there's so much hype on Game 3. There'll be so much hype on Game 5. I heard, what did I see? I think that the get-in tickets for Game 5, the lowest price to get a ticket for Game 5 now is, I think it was $12,000 the last I checked, which would make it the most expensive get-in ticket in the history of anything ever. Concert, sport event, World Series, World Cup, boxing match, you know, anything. It is the most sought after ticket, Madison Square Garden, for the next game.
Well, that was Dynamite's competition tonight, and
yeah, I don't think that they're going to do very well.
I don't think the show's going to do all that well. I mean, they had a good lineup, but the problem was, the second hour was a little bit better, but man, that first hour had a dead crowd, and it sounded like an empty building, and it was a rough watch for about an hour or so, although it did turn around in the second hour. So it opened up with Tony Schiavone and Tommaso.
Well, we got to talk about the UFC. So the UFC...
No, we did that earlier, but what's going on Sunday?
No, okay, Sunday, I mean, it's the most talked about UFC show in history. I mean, they're from the legal standpoint, you know, both sides have been sending in arguments. They're trying to get a judge to rule against the show. Obviously, the show's going to happen. Trump said he's going to keep the thing up. The Justice Department said that they're taking the thing down 10 a.m. the next morning. So, you know, whatever Trump said, it's like just not true. So here's the thing. They're trying to make this argument that and they've been doing this all along, that TKO is going to lose $30 million on this show. And on the show itself, if you don't include the money that they're getting paid by Paramount, they probably will lose over $30 million on the show. However, they're getting paid by Paramount, like, you know, I mean, it, you know, probably about $950 million this year. So it's like, this is not going to lose the money that they say it is. It's like, you know, they're not including, because that, you know, as far as for a pay-per-view itself, I mean, that's, you know, if you break it down, like where the pay-per-views are more valuable than the weekly shows, which obviously they are, and this one more than almost any, you know, I mean, it's like this the value of this is $30 million easy, or not easy, but $30 million is about what I would estimate it at. So they're not losing money on the show. And I mean, that's part of the thing, is like, it is a for-profit event. And you know, they're, the argument, of course, is the president is in fact bought into the company, knowing that, you know, all of this is going to be great for the visibility of the company. So as far as the fights, you know, it's Ilya Topuria, who's, you know, probably the best fighter in UFC. You know, he's 17-0. He already put on Instagram that he's 18-0. So Justin Gaethje is probably none too happy. He's the opponent. They are fighting for the lightweight championship. And Armin Sarukian, who is, you know, one of the top contenders at lightweight, he bet $1 million that Justin Gaethje is going to win.
$1 million?
Yes. Shouldn't that be like, so Dana White was asked about that, because number one, with all of the problems that they have had with gambling and gamblers trying to fix fights and things like that, and suspicious and things and like that, these fighters should not, like, I mean, it should be like rule number one, you cannot gamble on UFC. They say you can't gamble with your teammates, but these fighters should have it right in their deals. You cannot gamble on UFC. I mean, that's one of the reasons that, you know, baseball and football, I mean, they've been so strict on gambling, because they've all had problems at certain points in history, you know, in attempts to fix games. Obviously, that's, you know, from the 1919 World Series to, you know, some of the UFC fights and everything like that, and point shaving scandals in basketball and things. I mean, it's not like it's never happened, and even if it has never happened, it's like it's too easy. When you're talking about fighters who are not making that much money, but, you know, even if you are, once you get into that gambling world, you know, and you got a fighter who's out there betting $1 million on a fight, it's like, if he loses and he's out $1 million, he may need a way to get some money back. And, you know, you cooperate with people like that. There are ways that you can allow them to make a lot of money and perhaps get some money back, and it is the worst thing possible for UFC. So, but Dana White said it's not Sarukian, it's one of his friends who bet the million. And Sarukian did it right on the live stream. It's not like, you know, whatever. So, I don't know. That's a really dangerous situation. Alex Pereira, Cyril Gane, interim championship. Alex, you know, had fought not all that long ago at 185 pounds. He is 258 pounds now, in heavyweight shape. It'll be interesting, because he, you know, I thought he would come in at you know, he was walking at 230, not all that long ago. I think in his last fight, you know, he cut from 230. And so he's going to go in there and carry 28 extra pounds. And I can't imagine that that's not going to affect his stamina. So he better hope for a quick fight, I think. Sean O'Malley against Ayman Zahabi, Firas Zahabi's younger brother. Obviously, O'Malley is on the card to get a big win. He's one of their top stars. Josh Hockett and Derek Lewis, two guys who, in fact, were not allowed at the press conference for fear that they might say something embarrassing. But Josh Hockett is a very talked about fighter. And Derek Lewis is long past his prime, so he should win. And I think that they want, when you talk, even if you're like full of shit talking guy, like this guy who's basically he copies pro wrestling promos, but he's not good at it. But, it's not like Chael, but at least he talks. He's kind of like a Colby Covington. So that's better than not doing anything. Michael Chandler against Mauricio Ruffy. Chandler's past his prime. Kyle Daukaus against Bo Nickel. Bo Nickel, one of the great wrestlers of our generation. But he lost the fight with Rainer de Ritter. So he's trying to get back. Steve Garcia against Diego Lopes, the Dominic Mysterio lookalike. And it's a 7-fight card that starts at 8 p.m. Eastern. So we're probably talking about 7 fights, probably about instead of like a 6-hour show, we're probably talking about a 4-hour show, probably ending midnight Eastern roughly. So that's the it's the most talked about show in the real world in UFC history, and we'll see how it performs. And the other thing is the Conor fight on July 11th, which is with Max Holloway. It is pretty much a lock that will be the biggest gate in UFC history, way over $20 million. So Conor still draws.
All right, the Dynamite show opened up with the Tony Schiavone interview with Ciampa, where Ciampa basically wanted him to do the same thing he did on Collision, which is tell the world that he is better than Chris Jericho. And Schiavone didn't want to say it this time, and so Ciampa was going to throttle him. But then Jericho's music hit, and he came out. And they did a lot of comedy here early. And
very comedy-oriented, yeah.
It was very comedy-oriented, and man, this crowd was just quiet. They got a couple of Tommy Chants and Tommy's Mommy
Chants.
They
got a lot of Tommy Chants, actually. Tommy's Mommy, Tommy Chants, yeah.
But finally, yeah. Jericho ended up getting serious, and he says, you know what? This is a very serious issue to me. And he says, you're an angry man. I suspect you changed your attitude. Pull that stick out of your ass before I shove it up there even further. Calls him Tommy again, and they ended up getting into a big fight, and a bunch of guys came down to break it up. So presumably this is taking place Forbidden Door?
Presumably Forbidden Door. They didn't say it.
No, they did not. But
I would think so. I would think it's a Forbidden Door.
Yeah.
They really haven't said anything. We know the two Owen matches. Obviously we know Ospreay and Strickland, and then whatever the women's match will be.
We got four matches. We got the Team MJF versus Team Briscoe. Kenny Omega and Zack Sabre Jr., and then two tournament matches.
You're right, Kenny and Zack. So the team thing, do you think the team thing is to protect Max? Or, because it's really weird to me that, you would do a 12-man, a 6-on-6 cage match on a pay-per-view. I mean, I could see that, if it's a War Games or something, or if it's a Blood and Guts, but those are, those are TV, that's a TV match. I mean, they do Anakin in the arena, but usually when they do those, they still have a world title match. So this show will not have a world title match, and that has been pretty much a fixture. Not every AEW pay-per-view, but all but a few have been.
The thing is, I'm not sure. Like, it'd be one thing if this was an Anarchy in the Arena match and, like, he could brawl backstage.
They just did.
No, my point is, asked about MJF. If they were doing a match where they could brawl backstage and he could disappear for a while and do whatever, but they're all in the cage. And it's going to be a big cage, but it's 12 guys inside one cage. And I think it's going to be awfully hard for him to hide and be protected in a match like that. I mean, I think they're just doing it because that's the match they want to do.
It's really weird because they have all of these guys that all the TV has been Kevin Knight, Kyle Fletcher, Andrade, who else? All Mark Briscoe, all doing promos wanting a world title shot. And then you end up not even having a world title match. Well, you know, and I thought like, I thought for San Jose, you know, that like a lot of people here had hoped for like a mystical MJF rematch. I didn't expect that one for a million reasons, but I thought it was the perfect city to do Andrade, especially when Andrade had that great match on the last show, and they're still building it. And it's like, I'm trying to figure out what they're building it for. The other one is that the stip is that if the babyfaces win, Mark Briscoe gets a title shot at MJF. And if that's at the Montreal pay-per-view,
I don't think that's the Montreal pay-per-view.
Yeah, well, I mean,
I think the Montreal pay-per-view is Kenny Omega.
Okay, well, if the Montreal pay-per-view is Kenny Omega, then you would think that this pay-per-view should be Mark Briscoe, because that's still, you know.
Well, I think what it seems like is going to happen is they're going to do like four straight weeks of MJF title matches.
I don't know physically you want to do that.
Well, you may have to, because you're going to get... Well, I guess it's possible MJF's team could lose, but Jet is supposed to get a title shot.
I think MJF's team's going to lose for sure. All right. Why would you put the champion in a tag match unless it's there to...
Well, because the story is if his team wins, Jet gets a shot at MJF.
Yeah, well...
So that means Jet will not get a shot at MJF. So then you can do Mark as probably a TV match.
Mark is more likely to get the shot than Kevin Knight, I would think.
And then Andrade may not get one at all in the foreseeable future.
Well, he should.
Because it seems to be the idea is that he wants his title shot, and Don Callis keeps telling him he's going to get it, but he never does.
Yeah.
And that probably leads to him splitting from the Don Callis family.
Yeah.
But we'll see. So anyway, then we had another one here. So they just announced that Saray is unable to compete.
Well, she flew in. I mean, she's there with Takumi Iroha.
And, Dave, we knew she was unable to compete like a month ago.
She was cleared in Japan. She cleared, she flew in, and their doctor didn't clear her. That's what they said. And, I mean, in Japan, they said that she was going, and she said she's bringing Takumi Iroha with her in case... She couldn't do it. So it was.
But they didn't use her. I can see why they used Maya World, because there was a real life tragedy.
Yeah, that's why it was a lot. The Maya World thing worked out a lot better. I mean, you know, maybe they'd have used Iroha under normal circumstances, but Maya World, obviously her brother just died, and I think that, you know, just for the story and everything, it was just a better story, and it was better, you know, uplift, you know, someone who, you know, obviously had a horrible, horrible, horrible week. Give her a win, which people didn't expect at all, and move her on. You know, so I completely understand not using Takumi Iroha in this one. But but she said that she was cleared and got here, and the doctor here wouldn't clear her. So they had backups in play, and obviously, you know, I mean, Maya World was there, Takumi Iroha was there, so they were all there.
We had Don Callis and Jet doing a promo backstage, and Andrade showed up again, said he wanted the world title shot, and he's upset about Jet being the new top guy in the Don Callis family, and he says, Jet, you got to get to the back of the line. And so he wanted to know what Don was going to do, and before Don could answer, Jet said, nah, we got to get going, we got some business to do. So they headed towards the ring. We had John Moxley, Shane Taylor, Continental title match. So it wasn't Moxley's hometown, and he sold a ton for this guy, and we had some Let's Go Moxley chants during his comeback, but not a really heated match. And finally, Moxley went for an ankle lock, hit a stomp, put him in the bulldog choke, and Shane Taylor tapped out. So Moxley retains the title, but then Taylor attacks him after the match, and he starts whipping Moxley with the belt, and then Garcia tries to make the save, and Shane's guys cut him off, and then Marina tries to make the save, and Trishador cuts her off, and then Shane went up top and hit another big splash on Moxley, and it sets up a street fight for the Collision show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with was it 5-on-5?
I don't know if they specify, but I presume so.
I think it's 5-on-5 with the women involved, with Trisha Dora and Marina involved, is what I presume. But I think they said 5-on-5.
Don Callis comes out for a promo, introduces the Jets. Kevin does a promo, thanks Don. And he says, you know, you guys are upset with me, but you should be upset with Darby for failing. He didn't get the job done. He let us all down. Might be mad at me for breaking up Jet Speed, but you know what? Such is life. So anyway, he said, tonight, MJF, I want to talk to you. Get your ass out here. I got something to say. But instead, they hit Darby's music. Darby flies in, hits Jet with the skateboard, starts beating him down, and then out comes the Don Callis family. Darby runs for his life, flees the building. They all chase him. Presumably, they did not catch him. But Darby is back.
Mm-hmm. I think he's going to be in that 12-person match. I'm almost sure, because Kevin's in it. And I figured when they did the angle, it was going to be a singles match. But then when they announced a 6-on-6, that Knight was in it. So Darby pretty much has to be on the other side.
We had a Mark Briscoe Pac match, which was a good match.
Very good.
Was a little weird at the finish, because what was supposed to happen was Pac is supposed to go for a shooting star and Briscoe gets his knees up, but Pac is too high, and like he completely missed the knees and he hit the move, but they sold it anyway. Briscoe then grabbed him, hit the J driller, and pinned him. And I mean, they had a shot from directly above, and you could see he was nowhere near the knees. He just squished this guy with his finish. But it wasn't what was supposed to happen, so they just kept moving like it didn't happen. And then Briscoe hit the J driller, pinned him. And then Mark cut a promo on MJF. And Max, of course, comes out and talks about how you're not getting a title shot. I'm the guy. I'm the rising tide that lifts all ships. You would be nothing but an anchor. And he says, you have no friends. Friends are stupid. They're a liability. So Jay Lethal, Lee Johnson, and Blake Christian hit the ring. They start stomping down Mark. Mark makes his own comeback. He gets overwhelmed. Conglomeration runs down. And that's when Mark cuts the promo and announces Team Max versus Team Briscoe. 6-on-6 in a cage. It's a lot of people in one cage. Yeah. And if Mark's team wins, he will get a championship match.
So it'd probably be Mark, Cassidy, O'Reilly, Strong, Ishii, Darby, maybe. Against MJF, and the other five guys are all from the Callis family.
It appears he's getting a bunch of people from the Don Callis family, yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's what...
So Jay Lethal, Lee Johnson, and Blake Christian don't look like they're going to be in a pay-per-view. Main event.
That would be bad for them being pay-per-view main event.
Which, by the way, they did mention this is the main event of the show.
Yeah.
So that's the big match.
Well, it's cage match and the champion's there, so it should be the main event.
We had Andrade and Orange Cassidy, and they did a pants spot early where Andrade ripped the pants off, and then Orange took off his pants, and he had more pants underneath. And so Andrade worked him over for a while, and... Orange made a comeback. Crowd was completely dead at points during this match. And then finally, Orange sent him outside.
They did a lot of shtick early. Once they did the wrestling, it was pretty damn good. But it took a while to get going, because they wanted to do a lot of sight comedy, you know, between the pants and the girl, and the girl at ringside. And
oh, they had Leo Rush out there as
Leo
well.
Leo Rush was there for whatever reason, doing selfies with everybody. So yeah, they did all that, and then the last couple of minutes were pretty good. I think the match was not as good as you probably would have expected it to be, though.
So finally, Orange goes for the punch. Andrade hits the back elbow out of nowhere, hits a DM, gets the pin, and then he hit his catchphrase.
Yeah,
we had a quick Ospreay promo from last week where he was all excited about making it to the finals. Said nothing would stop him from going to Wembley and main eventing All In. He said he guess he had to owe something to the Death Riders for all of this. And then, presumably, Alex Windsor showed up.
She was
weeping and hugging him, and then they cut away. But, we only saw the back of her head.
Yeah, it was Alex Windsor, and she was sad because she had lost her match in the tournament.
Yes.
And also, perhaps, you know, I think that was the story. He said, you know, she was sad because she lost to Mercedes.
Well, she was sad because she wanted to go win the title at Wembley. And now that's off. So I think that was a bigger issue then.
She can win the tag title now.
Oh, yeah, maybe. We had a Tekla video package, which was funny because they decided to do a recap of what happened with her in Stardom.
But yeah, it was like Taro Okada spots.
Except we never got Taro Okada's name. We never found. I mean, they never told us where the second attack took place, which was WrestleMania weekend. There was no voiceover whatsoever. It was like 15 seconds. Hey, we got a video package, but probably could have been a little better. Moxley and the Death Riders did a promo. Mox is selling it like he can't even talk because he got choked out, and that's when they challenged Shane Taylor. So we had Sky Blue and Maya World. And the Triangle of Madness cut a promo. They made fun of Saray for being hurt. They made fun of Maya. And Renee noted before the match that Maya's younger brother had passed away this week. And they did this at ringside, so I don't know how many people in the crowd actually knew, because there were people in Maya, but there were also Sky Blue chants. It was kind of back and forth. But if you were certainly watching at home, I mean, it was a, you know, it was a very emotional match. Maya, I mean, Sky just beat her up the entire time. Maya made a big comeback.
Maya looked really good.
She had some awesome suplexes. She looked
really good. You know, they allowed her to look really good. You know, gave her more than they've ever given her. You know, it's kind of an interesting thing because, you know, she basically got her job there by default when, was it Miranda Alizé and Nixon Newell just kind of like walked out, remember? And they just kind of were there.
Yes.
And then they got a job for, you know, it's kind of a lesson for everyone, kind of like, don't walk out, but if you're here, you know, you can, if you're here and you're willing to do something on 30 minutes notice and put out a good thing, you know, you may get a contract, and they got a contract, and now she's got a big win. You know, I mean, it was really, you know, I thought it was a really cool thing to give her the win, you know, considering the week she's been through. I mean, I think in most cases this would not happen. But it did, and but I thought the match was a lot better than, you know, if you would, you know, the match was a lot better than I thought on paper.
Maya won with a cradle, which means it's Maya and Athena in the semifinals.
Yeah.
Which means probably Mercedes and Athena will be the finals of the women's Owen.
I'm wondering if they want to go there again. They've already done that match. I mean, you know, it should be the finals. It's hard to say because, you know, like whatever it is certainly not what was planned, because Mercedes was never even supposed to be in the tournament. Now I think she has to win it. You know, I'm guessing from everything that Willow was probably the one who was going to win the tournament.
They announced Kenny Omega's Zack Sabre Jr. for Forbidden Door. Then we had MJF meeting with the Callis family backstage, and he wanted to recruit guys, and Callis is blowing him off, but then Max has a briefcase full of money, and then Callis goes, well, I'm going to buy us all a boat. And Jet steps up and accepts and says, I will be on your team, but I get a title shot if we win after Forbidden Door. Actually, you know what? He didn't say that. He only said he would be in the match if Max gave him a title shot. So win or lose, Jet gets a shot against MJF.
Mm-hmm.
Which actually plays into the Andrade storyline, because Andrade's pissed off, wants to know when he's going to get his title shot. And Callis says, well, you have my word, you'll get that title shot. So I don't think he's getting that title shot anytime soon. Then we had Brody and Swerve, Owen Hart semifinal. This was a really good match, but like, I think like most of this show, if this would have been in front of 3,000 people, I think the show would have been much better.
It's not the number of people, it's just the
well, you can hear it. Like, there aren't that many people in the building. Like,
yeah, but
if there would have been way more people in the building and a hotter crowd, would have been...
There have been plenty of shows that they've done with 1,500 people, and freaking NXT had 300
All right, let me rephrase that. If this show had been in front of a hotter crowd,
absolutely,
the whole show would have been better.
Agreed. But I thought that this match was actually quite good.
It was quite good.
Yeah,
there were several matches on the show that were quite good.
This one I think was pretty much better than anything on the show, though.
They took the turnbuckle pad off.
Yeah, I know. They did it for you this time. I know. And Brody got bleeding like crazy.
He was bleeding all over the place after being sent into it. And then Brody hit the DVD in the corner. Big pile driver. Swerve kicked out. Went for the Gonzo bomb. Swerve avoided it. Aubrey had to flee to get out of the way. Nana hit Brody with the ring bell. And then Swerve hit the vertebraker and got the pin. So it is Swerve versus Will Ospreay, as we pretty much figured, as the finals of the men's Owen, which is taking place at Forbidden Door. So that's 2 weeks from now, by the way, right?
It is the 28th, so it'd be two
weeks. So two more Dynamites.
2 weeks from Sunday. There'd be, yeah, two more Dynamites. The Dynamite on the 17th and 24th, yeah. Yeah. Houston and I'm not sure where the 24th is.
All right, we got a couple of some notes from NXT. This was a much better show than usual.
Real good show, I thought.
Noam Dar and Romeo Moreno versus Axiom and Nathan Frazier.
This match was freaking awesome.
This match was apparently, they shot an angle, I guess, on social media, but like didn't advertise it. We had no idea Axiom and Nathan Frazier were working on this show, and they show up and they freaking had a great match.
This match was awesome. Oh my God. That Romeo, oh my.
He's actually really, really good.
I mean, I've seen him in Europe, you know, and in some really good matches. I was very, very impressed with him there. You know, he's from Spain, Zozaya. But, I mean, he was great. Noam Dar, you know, he's great. I mean, he's going nowhere, you know. And you know, Frazier and Axiom, those guys are so great. They, you know, they're in the wrong place. That's all I could say. They're still in the wrong place. Like, there's some people who are better suited for one place or another, and they're in the wrong place. And Zozaya might be, too. But, because he's, man, he, and he's tall, you know, not tall enough. He's much taller than the other three. You know, good body, 21 years old. He was a guy who the Rev Pro did a show in Spain, and, you know, he was booked on the show. And, you know, they saw him, and they booked him on every show they could until WWE signed him. You know, and it was inevitable. It was inevitable to me watching that guy that somebody's signing him, you know, because at his age, with his look, you know, I mean, you know, he, you know, I mean, obviously they're not going with him now, but he's really good.
So we had Romeo trying a dive, got double super kicked. Axiom hit a Spanish fly on Noam Dar. Axiom hit the kick on Romeo. Nathan hit the Phoenix Splash, and Axiom got the pin. So that was a very, very good match. Great match.
Great match, yeah. Then I mean, that was like an arena, you know, an Arena Mexico main event. You know, it was really that good.
So we had the Mr. NXT pageant, which was completely bizarre because they clearly wanted to do something for Pride Month, but they, for whatever reason, were absolutely petrified to say anything about it. So we had three judges.
It was weird. Also, they told fans to vote. But usually when they do this, they will tell you, you know, like if you're on the West Coast, you can't vote. They had like, you know, it's like you couldn't vote if you're on the West Coast because the show's already over. I mean, you know.
But, well, it was, you could vote with a QR code. So it wasn't like you were calling a 900 number or anything. And maybe when you were on the West Coast, if you use that QR code, they just said, sorry, voting's done.
Yeah.
I didn't vote, so.
I didn't vote either.
Well, it was Mr. England and Shiloh Hill, and first they did their outfits, and then the second
Angels.
Part of the contest was a talent show,
yeah,
in which we actually saw Shiloh juggling while on a unicycle. Which,
that's what my brother does.
That's pretty impressive, yeah. It's impressive.
Yeah. I was impressed. You know, my brother's been doing that since he was like a teenager, but it's still pretty impressive.
And then
you know, that Shiloh, like, he did the Rubik's Cube, you know, and I mean, it might have been gimmicked.
I'm pretty sure that was gimmicked, but
yeah, but
the unicycle with the juggling was not gimmicked.
You can't gimmick that.
No, he did it. It was very impressive.
Yeah.
And then the third, the act three was public speaking. They just cut a promo. Yeah. And then the fans voted for Shiloh, so he won. And then Tristan attacked him from behind with his cane, beat him down, and posed with the sash. It was a good, simple angle. Probably could have been better, but it was fine.
It was good to get Tristan over as kind of like this arrogant pretty boy thing, you know? I mean, it worked, I think.
We had Mason, Rook, and Naraku, which was a good match. It's amusing watching Evil work straight wrestling matches with no gimmickry whatsoever. Although Cam Hendrick did show up and distracted Mason, and then Naraku hit everything as Evil and got the pin. So he's getting the championship match coming up at Great American Bash. Mm-hmm. Forbidden Door Weekend. Yeah, Evil versus Tony D.
Yeah, head to head.
For the title, yeah. How about that? That is the Forbidden Door.
Yeah, because WWE's got the pay-per-view the day before. So that's going to be a busy weekend.
We had, Kendall Grain, Kalani Jordan.
That was a great match.
This was actually quite a great match.
Yeah.
And both women looked really good. You know, Kalani, sometimes she does too much, this gymnastics spot. She's just wrestling. Now she's a shooter.
She's a shooter,
actually.
She's gotten a lot better. She's really good. And freaking, Kendall Gray. It's like every time you see her, it's like she is so freaking talented. It's like she can do anything. I always say it. She's fantastic, and she's getting a title shot too against Lola Vice.
Yeah, she actually won this match. They're not doing a three way. It is one on one. Kendall Gray and Lola Vice at the PLE.
I would expect that they're, because Lola Vice is really good too. I expect they're going to have like a fantastic match. Plus, they're going to do the gimmick of the wrestler versus the kicker. That shooter thing. So. That gives them more than just professional wrestling spots to build a match out of. So it's got a chance to be, to have that real flair, but use the pro wrestling moves as well. I just expect it to be excellent.
Show is actually the opposite of Dynamite, because I thought the first hour was much better than the second hour. We had Jasper Troy and Dion Lennox, which was just there. The crowd wasn't much into it. Just kind of a match. And then Jasper goes for the Vader bomb. Dion moved about an hour early. And then he picked the dude up and he body slammed him and pinned him. He body slammed him. Mm-hmm. That was his finish. A body slam. Jasper Troy pinned with a body slam. Mm-hmm. So then Saquon appeared on the big screen. And
Man, that doesn't sound good for him.
No, it really does not.
Because when you have guys that size, WWE, that they always give them the benefit of the doubt. If they're pinning you with a body slam and you're that size.
No interference, nobody distracted. Just got pinned by a body slam.
Yeah.
And Saquon came out of the crowd, hit Osiris with a baseball bat, went running, and that was that. So then we had the main event, which was, actually we had Keanu Carver saying he wants a championship match, and he's going to get a match next week, I guess. And so Tatum and Zari is the main event for the women's North American title. And it was a pretty good match. I think they probably could have had a better match. Crowd wasn't super into this, which was kind of weird because they love Tatum Paxley. And they were super into Zari in the Soul feud, but they just really weren't into this match for some reason. And then we had all the big spots at the end. Tatum hit a coast-to-coast and finisher attempts back and forth. And then Zarya just avoided a moonsault to the floor, hit an F5 on the floor, speared her in the ring, hit another F5, and pinned her. Mm-hmm. Clean pin, won the title. So she's the new North American champion. And it was kind of surprising. Heel gets the clean win over a pretty big NXT star in Tatum Paxley. So. Title change there in the main event, and as noted, probably the best NXT show in actually maybe a few months, actually.
I thought it was really good, yeah. Yeah.
All right, well, before we go, let's do these spoilers for half of Ring of Honor Global Wars, the other half taking place tomorrow at the Collision tapings.
Yes, so there was a tag team match with, this will not be on, Stephen Borden and three other guys. It wasn't taped. And then, okay, so then for Global Wars, Athena beats Shuri for the Ring of Honor women's title. I heard this had great heat and the action was very good. Mark Davis kept the national title, beating Ace Austin in a very good match. Takeshita beat Lee Johnson for the international title. Crowd was very hot for this match. They received This Is Awesome chants. Whatever. Mina Shirakawa, Harley Cameron beat Lacey Lane and Viva Van. Mystico, Mike Bailey, and the Outrunners beat Jay Lethal, Blake Christian, Rocky Romero, and Trent Beretta. The crowd was super into Mystico and to a lesser extent Bailey. Very well worked, good heat throughout. They got This Is Awesome chants. And that is what was taped. So Mystico was on the show tonight.
Do we have a lineup for what's coming tomorrow?
No. I don't know what's coming tomorrow. I don't know who's on the show tomorrow. I do expect, since I was told there are many Stardom women on the show tomorrow, so I don't know the names of any of them, but I guess, you know, several of them were not in the five-star Grand Prix. You know, Fuichan's not in, and, you know, I think Kazuki and some others, Hanako. But I'm not sure that they're going to be there. But, you know, it's heavy Stardom is what I was told for tomorrow.
All right, and then the Collision lineup has the Young Bucks and the Dogs, Kenny Omega, and Bad Dude Tito is on the Collision
bad
show.
Bad Dude Tito's, you know, I'm glad to see him get something. That's a guy who I think he's probably one of the best non-signed guys in the world, you know, or in the country, I should say, whatever. You know, just a guy, he's been on, you know, on their West Coast tapings, always looks good. Been on New Japan tours, you know, New Japan USA a lot. Always looks good, like top level good, you know. I you know, I don't know, like you know, I mean if they have time, him and Kenny Omega, this could be a breakthrough match for him.
The Death Riders and Shane Taylor Promotions is Moxley, Claudio, Pac, Garcia, and Marina against Shane Taylor, Lee Moriarty, Sean Dean, Carly Bravo, and Trishador. Street fight. Mm-hmm. And then the TBS title, Survival of the Fittest Qualifier, Julia Hart and Persephone. Mm-hmm. So that is the Collision, which is taking place tomorrow and will air on Saturday. So, all right, we're going to wrap it up for today, everybody. Dave's going to be back Friday with Garrett and New Observer up on Friday as well. Dave and I were up on Monday with Raw and all of the news. There's a bunch of stuff up on the front page for you to check out. And that's it. We'll talk to you again after a while.